This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is Australia's best radio station and you're on the Escape Hour.
Too right.
Now, our guest has, I think, should win an award for planning. Megan Petronio, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Now, Megan.
Welcome back.
Cheers.
Oh, that's right. She's been in before.
Yeah.
This time we are travelling to Cuba. And I believe that Cuba is not necessarily the most straightforward place to travel to. And if you're an independent traveller and you like to make your own arrangements, it's somewhat time consuming.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess you could take a couple of routes. You could go down the path of booking a tour, and there are many of them available. But for my friend and I was quite fortunate that my friend who I travelled with, Jo, she also helped out with the research. And being a fan of socialism and history and politics, she actually researched the hell out of Cuba, and we ended up going on a bit of a Che and Fidel pilgrimage. So that was fascinating.
Oh, wow.
And I think that if you did a tour, you would miss out on a lot of what we saw and experienced. You would just be kind of kept in a bit of a tourist bubble. But we went way beyond the bubble. So I really recommend getting online, looking at your various forums and doing so much research. You've got to research the money, the food, all of those things that were an issue for us, the transportation options. Just, I really suggest, don't go to Cuba thinking things will be easy and that you'll be able to just get money or book something online, because many of the things that we take for granted here, like internet access, you just can't get.
Right. So take us through the process. We've already got your travelling companion who is very much so into the political history, and which is living today. It's
absolutely
in transition, but it's still there.
Mm. Yes.
So you've got someone who's quite learned.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite wizened, but sort of on the path. But you've got a country that is not necessarily set up for really easy tourism. How do you go through those processes when they're not highly online? They're not really acquisitive of the tourist dollar?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the Cuban government is aware of, you know, the fact that they are in an economically challenging situation. They do welcome the tourist dollar, and it's fascinating with Obama's relations with Cuba and how he tended to open it up.
Mm-hmm.
But then after Trump, things changed slightly. But for Australians, we've been fortunate to always be able to travel there, and we can access Cuba either by cruise, by various different airlines. You can go via Air Canada, or you can travel Qantas to LA, then Mexico down.
Mm-hmm. So it's really only the US carriers which are troublesome. It's Canadian, Mexican, anywhere in the Caribbean, basically.
Yeah, that's right. You could definitely go from South America, the Caribbean. Absolutely. Yeah, those are great options. But I would not recommend the surety of flying directly from the States. Yeah, especially some of the southern states.
Is that because American airlines in general are pretty terrible?
Actually, I won't name which particular American airline that we had to transit through, but it was not pleasant.
No, and they're very perfunctory.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, but Airborne Greyhound, they're called.
Right. After, I have to say, on the way back, there was a really concerning security issue, and they kept Joe and I quiet by just stocking us up with bourbon. So I welcome
not
that.
Stupid.
Not completely.
Wow, that sounds like an interesting experience. That. How long were you delayed for in this hold-up?
Oh, it wasn't too bad. It was only a couple of hours. Somebody got on the airline and realised that they were on the wrong flight. And so baggage
had to be removed. Is he a 12-year-old boy from Perth?
Perhaps. Yeah, so that was quite challenging. And then one of the strangest moments was turning over to the seat next to us after that security issue, and then really bad turbulence that Joe and I experienced the whole trip. And then there was a little nun doll sitting next to us on an empty seat with some chains around it, and it was just quite spooky. So
that is spooky.
A chain nun.
Yes, a doll.
A doll. Well, I mean, Cuba is sort of, you know, it's steeped in like some of that fantastic Caribbean drama and dance and mystery and,
absolutely,
you know, some of that wonderful sort of scary magic.
I'm fascinated.
Definitely. You can feel and sense all of that. The first thing that you notice when you arrive and land on the island is the various different smells and sounds. It's so loud. From the streets, you'll have in one house sort of Afro-Cuban beats coming out, and then you'll have salsa or mambo coming from another, and people singing, dancing. And it is really true what they say. There is so much of that romantic notion of Cuba going on. But there's also, you know, a lot of history and a lot of darkness to the country. It is a country of revolution. Since the 1500s, they've been constantly going through revolution, from the Spanish, from the Americans. And, of course, we all know about the revolution. So it's...
Give us a précis and how that plays out still today. Yeah. Because not everybody knows. I think we're assuming that everyone's caught up on Cuban history.
Yeah.
Just give us a snapshot from your point of view about Monmouth history and where it's led to today and what you experienced when you landed.
Absolutely. So I'm not an academic on this, but from my experience...
No, 15 words or less.
Thank you. So obviously the revolution occurred in the 50s. I believe it was 56 that Fidel and his comrades were successful in the revolution.
So that was an overthrow of a...
Fascist
dictatorship, right wing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was...
And they were commie pinkos.
That's right. It was very, very capitalist, and obviously...
Because it was structured all around Bacardi. And
yes,
sugarcane.
Exactly.
So it was a corporatocracy?
Yes, well said, absolutely. So you can see remnants of that today with the fact that there's still a lot of monocropping going on. There's still a lot of, even though there isn't so much value in sugarcane or rum, there is sugarcane growing everywhere. And that plays out even in the foods that are available, and the system of using food rations and having a ration book that costs I think about $2 a month for every Cuban person to purchase this ration book, which equates to about 12% of the monthly the cost of living for them. And that means that they have a small portion of flour, oil, spaghetti, beans, and it's very basic. And so you don't... What's fascinating and what you would expect from such highly educated people with a diverse history is that the food doesn't taste very good and it's not very accessible. So that's an interesting way that it plays out in, I guess, nutrition and your daily experience of life. But, there are so many ways it plays out. Even today, I would say, in the tourism industry with the economy and, I'd say, the hustle.
Mm.
So there's a lot of hustle going on. You need to be... This is one of the areas I'd say it's important to research, to know the cost of things. Like, it will cost you about $50 to get... No, sorry, 20, say, and we'll talk about currency, but about $20 to get to the airport, from the airport to the city, whereas the hustle will be on and people will be trying to charge you more.
Mm. So $20 to get from the airport to the city.
Mm.
A ration book is $2 a month.
That's right.
So they're not stupid.
Exactly.
And they're not completely socialist in their thinking.
Oh, definitely not.
Yeah.
That's what's so fascinating. And I think that they haven't quite found that middle ground between capitalism and socialism or free enterprise.
Who has?
Yeah, good point. Yeah. So, it's just fascinating the way it plays out.
Yeah.
Now, do they salsa in the streets of Havana?
They actually do. And you know what? When we landed, we thought it would be everywhere. And it took us a little while. And I was really fortunate to be traveling with a dancer. And so we made our own salsa parties in the street regardless. And that was quite welcomed. And people were joining in. The Cubans were clapping and dancing with us and quite impressed at our hip-shaking ability, which was so fun. And then
can you just... because I know something about you.
Yes.
You're a dancer.
Yeah.
Can you just draw that out a bit? Because I think the listeners are going to be interested into why your hip shaking is probably better than most.
Thank you. I hope so. I am a Hawaiian hula dancer. I'm not of Hawaiian origin, so I'm really, really fortunate to be a part of the Hawaiian and Polynesian community in Australia, and have been learning for about 10 years. So that definitely helped me with some salsa. But the footwork is really interesting. And I think if you're going to go to Cuba, do a salsa class. Make sure you know where to put your feet and how to hold your frame so that you're not just being thrown about the dance floor like I was, even if the hips were happening, okay?
Oh, God, you might lose your Crocs.
Please don't take Crocs. But it would have been a good idea for my friend Jo, bless her cotton socks, who on our first night in Cuba, we were off to salsa dance and she kicked this giant rock on the pavement. Then we danced for 6 hours on that broken toe. So the next day, yes, the next day we woke up and her foot was just deformed and blue and she couldn't go anywhere for the entire day.
So then you had to go through the experience of the medical system in Havana?
We didn't actually. We took our own. Exactly. And I would really recommend taking your own medications. Obviously, all of the essentials that you take in any developing country, all of the gastro stop and bugs stop, all of that. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Very good advice.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
So there are two forms of currency, and the se'upe or the se'use, the cup or the kuk. And the kuk is for the tourists, and you can purchase that with a foreign currency such as Canadian dollars, euro, but certainly not US dollars.
Can you buy it with Australian dollars?
No.
So you have to go through another currency.
Definitely. Right. Yeah, I really recommend taking euro. That's going to be the most safe for you. I took a couple of different currencies just in case. Yeah, you can use that to purchase your meals in tourist sort of tailored cafes and restaurants, which there aren't a great deal of, I wouldn't say. What you do need to be cautious of, some people will take your cook and will give you change back in cup and you then won't be able to use that.
But you can use the currency for locals in local cafes and local businesses?
You're not technically supposed to. So
this sounds awful.
Yeah, so I wouldn't recommend it. But you may be fortunate to find somebody that could buy you some rum and help you out in a Cuban national store. But they do try to avoid that.
So they don't. So they're always use currency, do they? Use kind of coupon token.
That's right, the rations. So
ration system.
Yes,
yeah.
And they can even buy their rum with that, a portion of rum, which I think is fascinating. It's a little bit challenging.
Is that about keeping the tourists and the locals sort of segregated in some way?
I don't think that's the intention. It's purely the socialist economy and structure around it. So it's to ensure that the government can manage those funds appropriately. And
it's largely a cash society.
Definitely.
So you're not going there with your plastic.
That's right.
Your plastic.
So no tap and go.
No, definitely not. I really was surprised, though, that we did have access to ATMs in some of the cities like Havana and down in the south, Santiago de Cuba. It was completely okay and safe to use our card. We were able to get se'use and there were no issues with that. It was good, but I would not depend on that. Try and take as much cash as you can and keep it safe, obviously.
And with this cash, of course, you bought lots of food.
Yeah.
But you had some unique challenges in your food travels.
I certainly did. So I am a vegan and my travel buddy, Jo, she's usually a vegetarian and I was quite lucky. She's an amazing cook. She actually, as an ally, went vegan for the entire month. Bless her. And that we actually took 10 kilograms because of the research that we had done. We knew that beans were a staple and highly available, things like spaghetti. And we knew that spices weren't really Cuba's thing. So we took plenty of those and even powdered soy milk and coffee. Cubans will tell you they do coffee, but they don't necessarily. And I wouldn't depend on having power everywhere, as was the case for us in Santa Clara. Just one day we wanted a coffee and couldn't find it because there was no power. So, we took lots of our own products. 2-minute noodles, definitely take them if you're vegan, vegetarian. You won't have any issues taking in your own food and if there's no meat or dairy in there. So you can take all of your nuts and snacks and things like that, which definitely recommend. So besides that, we could pretty much get salad everywhere, but that was only tomatoes and carrots and cucumber. So
is there concern about water and fresh vegetables from a GI infection point of view? Like,
definitely water. You can't drink it from the taps. You need to buy your own water, and that's very expensive. And obviously has environmental implications as well. But for safety, definitely recommend that. We didn't seem to have an issue from the vegetables and how they were washed and consumed. Yeah, that was fine. It's the ice in your mojito that may get you.
Mm. Yeah, right.
Okay, you've got to watch out.
Yeah, and make sure your mint is clean.
So you make sure you're really jazzed up with a bit of rum because it's as a disinfectant.
Oh, my gosh. Well, maybe that's what they're thinking when they give you a glass that's 3/4 rum and just a splash of water and a handful of mint.
And what about cleaning your teeth? Did you clean your teeth in bottled water
I
as
did.
Well?
Or rum.
Yeah, pretty much rum. Just lived on rum, beans and rum. That's all a vegan.
So rum's vegan, yeah.
Exactly.
Now, getting on to the beans. Now, of course, beans are an absolute staple. I lived in Miami Beach for a little while many years ago and I loved plantains, rice and beans, one of my favourite dishes. But the beans...
Carb loading.
Yes. Well, I just didn't seem to care about carbs back then.
You still don't need to.
Well, you know, you need to watch your sugar intake and carbs are full of sugar.
Yeah.
So the beans are often... most likely cooked in lard.
Exactly. That was.
So how did you face that?
That was a real trap. So we learnt the words for meat and lard. And
so carne.
Si
carne. Yep.
Exactly. No pesque, you know,
no
all
fish.
Of those things. No leche, no jueve.
No
yeah,
eggs.
Exactly. So we had those basics down pat. And then... it was really
is vegetarianism overly common in Cuba? Is it something that people received very easily? This
definitely not. So with Cuban food, the revolution and the rations, they live on ham, cheese and pan. They are everywhere. So I think it's quite funny in Australia in particular, we have this very romantic notion about Cuba and the Cubano, how we have these massive subs that are packed with all sorts of vegetables and cheese and meats. And that is not what you'll get in Cuba. That is not a Cubano. You're lucky if you get bread and a piece of ham and some cheese. So for us, there was a funny story in Havana. We were so excited one night to go out for dinner, and as our knowledge of the area was growing and our Spanish were getting quite confident, we sat down in this really quaint a restaurant that was clearly kind of built in the 1500s, and we ordered our beans and asked about vegetariano or vegano, as they are tending to get an idea about. And this waiter just said, no, and very gruffly pointed us out of the restaurant, like, if you don't eat meat, we don't want you.
Wow. That will
savage.
It really was. So we went back home and Joe made some lovely bruschetta for us and we enjoyed that with a cigar on the balcony.
Joy 94.9, Australia's best radio station.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. We have been travelling to Cuba. We have learnt so much so far, Megan. Thank you for informing us. Now, I think that one of the most important things that we need to tell our listeners about, of course, is the LGBTI issues and concerns and how safe it is to travel within the country. There's been a lot of changes there over the last few years. Tell us about your experiences.
Yeah, well, I am a straight ally. And travelling with my friend Joe, when we booked in and two women, it was an interesting assumption made that we were in a relationship. So often our beds were either together or there was one double bed in our casa, which was quite sweet. It was a nice surprise. And we had to explain, oh, no, we're not actually married. We're friends. So do you mind if we have our own beds? And that was arranged. So I think from that, I got the impression that you wouldn't have any issues booking accommodation. Of course, I cannot comment on what it's like to live in Cuba as a member of the LGBTIQ community, But in Santa Clara, this lovely little city, I think it's about 5 hours out of Havana, it is known as the LGBTQI city, and sort of there's a real community there, and there's an official drag show. We actually experienced...
That would be wild.
Let's walk through an official drag show. So we're not talking about RuPaul. We've got Generalissimo, someone sitting there.
Yeah.
And so how does an official Cuban socialist drag show work?
Disappointingly, I got sick when we were in Santa Clara, so I didn't go. We have to go back and seek that out. But I did go to a drag show in Havana, and that was fascinating because my experience of gay bars in Australia is one where it's a very safe environment for a straight woman. And walking in to this bar in Havana, we were groped. We felt like fresh meat. And I remember just looking over at one stage and my friend Joe was pinned against the wall being grinded upon. And that was all well and good. Security came over and helped us out. And we were seated in order to watch this drag show. And it was fascinating. It was really, there was the most intense opening, and the presenter and host, oh, that was maybe a bit of a bad use of words.
Yeah, phrasing.
Wow. So I need a moment now.
Was that the drag queen's name?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I should have made note of what her name was. She was beautiful. She actually invited Joe on stage and they compared bust size for a moment there. And it was really, really special. And yeah, there was a lot of singing. There was a gentleman that was invited up on stage from Santa Clara. Lots of singing, lots of dancing, obviously. And it was just a really fascinating show with all of the glitter and glamour that you would hope for.
And so you were very much an object of everyone's attention yourself just by being visitors?
Definitely. And I think object is a good word for it. Mm. So in the streets of Cuba, the men and women not only notice each other, I think Cuba is known for being highly sexual and, everyone is quite overt with their sexuality. And so in terms of LGBTIQ, I think that it has changed from the previous machoism. Don't get me wrong, there's still a lot of machoism, and I experienced that, a lot of catcalling, a lot of groping of women in the street. But fortunately, the former president, Raul Castro's daughter, she, Mariela Castro, she was an activist and formed a National Center for Sex Education, and with that came brilliant campaigns around awareness, and there were films produced throughout the 90s and early 2000s that promoted this idea of awareness and equality. And so I think today the Cuba is towards LGBTIQ is certainly changing, which is great. But I think there are still a lot of changes. If I don't know that you could talk about gender and sexuality in terms of LGBTIQ very openly and be completely overt.
Yeah, I think so. It's not a same-sex marriage country yet, but there are calls apparently for same-sex to be implemented, although the legislation is a bit like it was in Australia, where being quite clear in the constitution that marriage is the voluntary established union between a man and a woman. Mm. So they will have to do some constitutional changes. But there have been calls to legalise same-sex marriage, and also I think there is a pride parade held every year.
There is a pride parade. Fantastic.
In May, to coincide with the International Day Against Homophobia.
So I think
it's good, which is coming up.
Exactly. And one thing that's fascinating, of course, Cuba being a socialist society, has free medical, and part of that now is gender reassignment surgery. So I think that's a massive shift.
That's a great thing for the LGBTIQ community.
Absolutely.
So you felt safe,
in my straight kind of ally way, I certainly did.
No, but in terms of being assigned these this room thinking that you might be a same-sex couple.
Yeah.
You didn't feel any problem.
No, and I felt that was really, really lovely. That was a great sign of
times.
Did
it differ somewhat outside of Havana? I mean, you've got Santa Clara, which has obviously got a great community there, but in some of the smaller towns that you visited or smaller cities?
I would say it would be, definitely, especially as you would move towards Guantanamo, which is a more militarized area, and that's where there's training and there's an awareness that in the military you still wouldn't be open. And yeah, they're very strong ideas of machoism and male identity is very strong.
Yeah. So speaking of military and all aspects of the United States in conjunction with Cuba, I mean, one of the concerns, of course, when Obama made, I mean, it was fantastic that he normalized relations, even if some of that has been reverted since Trump. But one of the main concerns for travelers, such as myself and yourself also, is that, you know, we needed to travel to Cuba because there was this sort of sense that it was going to change. It was going to become really Americanized. And the great news is that this is not happening.
Yeah, I would tell anybody not to worry. Get there in your own time. I felt a real pressure to get there ASAP before it was too Americanized. And I would say that many people of Cuba actually still have that American dream that they can, if they open up to some of the ways of the West, that the economy will be stronger. But I do not ever think that the Cuban people will sell off those beautiful things that they know are theirs and that draw the tourists, like the vehicles. And I hope, and I don't think that they would ever destroy the beautiful buildings and the architecture from the 30s, 40s and 50s that is so captivating. There was a lot of restoration going on. So I would say that the state that it's in now with this decaying beauty, that may likely change where you don't see the decay because there's more money coming in very slowly. But I don't think change is going to happen fast, and I don't think you'll ever see a McDonald's.
This is really good news. because one of the challenges, of course, when we travel is that, you know, multinational corporations have infiltrated so many parts of the world, and there's a McDonald's where you can view the pyramids from and that sort of thing. Not to say that they're a bad organization throughout, but it is lovely to be able to see that there are some places where you can go and not be assaulted with that. And I guess it's a complicated situation in Cuba because people want to have more money. They want to, you know, they don't want to be poor or forever, but what that balance is.
And absolutely.
And I think the issue with those things is to, it kind of prevents you from experiencing the traditional thing of the country. And if you are standardized food, which is a little bit of a problem with the globalization and in terms of having this food which is the same everywhere. And
Cubans are smart people and they know what they have is special. Their culture of dance and music, the education, the history, the way they're made up of so many diverse cultures, I think they will always celebrate that and never let it go, even as the economy develops. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but from my experience, there's so much pride and strength and resilience that I can't see the people of Cuba just handing it over to multinationals. The government has worked with a couple of different hotel chains to build various different hotels around the island. It's sort of a 50-50 or 60-40 arrangement, but there's still that presence and the tight control on those sorts of things. And I have to say, I'm so fortunate. I've been to about 28 countries and I have not experienced anything like Cuba. For all of the challenges that it presented whilst there, like the food and the transport and the language barrier, it just has so much to offer. Someone once said before we left, you know, it might be likely that you can't wait till you leave, but once you leave, you won't be able to, you know, you'll be so excited to get back.
Wow, that sounds incredible. And so you picked up a few new dance steps, I hope.
Yes, definitely. And I'm learning salsa and Spanish to hopefully go back and actually see my amor.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. Now, we haven't even touched on that subject.
All right.
All right. Back up the truck.
Back up the truck. Did you find it amor?
See, I fell in love. It's such a cliche. I know. I really, really aware.
Come on. Details.
So I have to say, I think I mentioned earlier the catcalling and the overt sexuality.
So it works.
No, it doesn't. No. So this was the difference. For two whole weeks, I had my bitch face on. If I don't know if I
RBF,
can say that.
Yeah.
Just to say, back away. Just, I don't want to deal with it. Yeah. Don't give me your attention. I'm here to see blah, blah, blah. And then I was 2 weeks in, sitting in the town square, as you do, using your internet, and this beautiful creature walked in. He was like a unicorn floating over a rainbow, had these gorgeous dreadlocks.
A lot of them here at Joy.
And he looked at me. I smiled. He smiled, winked, and then boom.
Presto.
It was on.
Woohoo.
Well,
we love a little bit of love at first sight.
We're going to have to get you back to hear a bit more about that.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
Thank you so much for coming on. You'll be looking for ways to fund your coming dreams, I could see, with the trip back in August.
Absolutely.
So just off air, you said something really fascinating about your experience in Cuba and what you learned. Tell us about the cactuses.
Oh, yes.
Cacti.
So the cool thing about falling in love and hanging out with somebody who's Cuban is that
it's
I could...
the pricks.
Yeah. Touché. I just noticed this curious thing of cactuses on the roofs of houses everywhere. And one night we were strolling the streets looking at the stars, as you do, and I asked him, why are there cacti on the roofs? And he explained it's actually to keep away the evil spirits and to bring good fortune. So it makes sense, and now I've got a cactus on my roof.
So they're scare cacti?
Yeah.
Well, look, they are scary, really. They've got enough, if they're the right kind of cacti, the prickly kind.
Yeah.
So will there be plans for your amour to visit Australia, perhaps, and you could show him the ropes?
Look, I think that's a visa issue that we're working to address, but I'm definitely going back in August. That's the soonest I can get back there, and then in December again to spend some more time with this beautiful human.
Christmas with the family.
Absolutely. I'm so excited about that.
Oh, that's
Feliz Navidad.
Sí, gracias.
Well, that is amazing. Hey, Megan, thank you so much for coming in. Friend of Russ.
Yeah,
friend
before
of Russ
we go, Cuba, number one tip.
Yeah, research. Research the crap out of everything. And book Airbnb and book every bit of accommodation before you go, because you can't use Airbnb once you're in country to book. And it was a really great way to make sure we had our accommodation and overcome language barriers.
There's one final question we ask all our guests. Do you fold or do you roll?
Ooh.
And we're talking about packing clothes, not toilet paper.
I totally went the toilet paper roll, because that's another tip. Take your own toilet paper to Cuba.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's like a developing country. You don't want to be caught out.
So go to Costco on the way through.
Yes, definitely.
Well, we
fold.
Fold, great. Thank you for that, Megan. Thanks, Mark. It's been lovely to be with you today. Thanks, Stefan.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.